Welcome, everyone. Can you all hear me? We're going to get started. Did y'all enjoy the lunch? Is that amazing? Those speakers were fabulous. My name is Sabrina Brown. I own a company called Sabrina Brown Consulting. I'm a lobbyist by trade. And I also serve on the board, the Texas Board for the Conference of Women. And we are thrilled that you're here today. I mean, this is truly amazing. The largest crowd. I mean, we've been sold out for over 2 months. It is really amazing to see all of you here. And I've been thrilled with all the speeches and everything that we've seen today. I hope you have. I hope you've enjoyed your day. And we have more fun to come. I have the pleasure of moderating this panel today. And I want to introduce you to our speaker. Malika Chopra is a mom, media entrepreneur, public speaker, and published author. Her most recent book, Living with Intent, My Somewhat Messy Journey to Purpose, Peace, and Joy, was published in April 2015. Chopra is the founder of Intent.com, a website and app focused on personal, social, and global wellness. Her intent is to harness the power of social media to connect people from around the world to improve their own lives, their communities, and the planet. Please help me welcome Malika.
Of course, I dropped my phone right away. Good afternoon. How is everyone? Had a nice lunch? Yeah? I'm going to make a confession. I'm visiting from LA, and I played hooky and skipped lunch to go and try your tacos. I went to one of them. So I heard it was amazing. But I'm here to talk about balance, finding intention and purpose, and taking care of ourselves. And so I actually followed my own advice and decided to, since I had the time, I would go and explore Austin a bit. And I love the city. So thank you for having me here. I can't believe this room because this is actually my second session today, so I thought we'd just have a small crowd. So it's truly, I'm humbled and honored to be connecting with you. I love the women's conferences and have only discovered them this year. I truly, they're my favorite thing to do, you know, to just spend a day talking and meeting women who are taking time out and, you know, with hopefully your company's support to focus on yourself a little bit. And so my intent in the next hour is to basically share some stories with you and also to do some very practical exercises. And we'll go through those. We'll do one kind of practical balance exercise. And then I will also try to guide you in a short meditation. And we'll get to that. But I think in the last session, it worked quite well. So nothing daunting. I promise to make it easy and hopefully something very practical that you can use in your life. So, to begin, the most common question I get in my life is, what is it like to be Deepak Chopra's daughter? So, I like to just address that up front and save everyone time and curiosity later. You know, I have one brother. We grew up in Boston. My father and my mother came to this country in 1970. For my father to do his residency in medicine. They arrived with $8 in their pocket and literally, I think, have built a great life for themselves and are very much the epitome of the American dream. So I feel truly honored. You know, I don't really know anything else. So for me, it is what it is. My dad is my dad. But I will tell you a little bit about our family life. So before I was about 9 years old, my earliest memories of childhood are actually quite unhappy. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she was with me and my brother. And my dad, as I said, you know, came here for his medical training. So he really worked 24/7. And when he wasn't working and he came home just to unwind, he used to drink, to go to sleep. He smoked incessantly, and he was just generally unhappy. So my parents, my early memories are of my parents always fighting. When my dad was around, my brother and I didn't really want him around because it was much nicer when he wasn't there. And I have a very clear memory of being about 9 years old, and my dad came home and something was different. And this day, he had been walking in Cambridge, Massachusetts, probably was going through his own midlife crisis, and walked into a meditation center. And for my father, when he learned how to meditate, for the first time in his life, he felt a sense of peace, of quiet, of connection. And despite growing up in India, you know, my family in India was a very Western-focused family. So despite growing up in India, he had never had this experience before. And so for him, that first meditation was quite transformational. In fact, in one day, he quit drinking and smoking and changed his life. So my dad came home, and he took my mom and took her to the meditation center, and she learned how to meditate. Now, my mom's a very grounded person, so there was nothing like melodramatic, but for her, it just felt like coming home. The next day, I learned how to meditate. I was 9 years old, and my brother was six, so I'm 45 now, so I've literally been meditating my entire life almost, and it's been a great gift. The day after that, my dad made his brother and their entire family learn how to meditate. Then my mom's sister and her entire family had to learn. By the end of the week, the entire Indian community in Boston had to learn how to meditate. And so my dad was from the beginning very much one of those people who kind of encouraged people to join. And so I really do feel like it was a great gift for me and my family. And it really changed our family life. It was transformational just for my brother and me. Like suddenly my dad was around more. My parents were happier. My dad would look at me and my brother and be like, oh, so now what grade are you in? Like he finally took some interest in us. And I think what it did is it helped our family get more connected. So my brother and I were basically the guinea pigs for all of my dad's experiments. So it began with meditation, but then he would make us do memory tricks. We would do things like play the Ouija board and, you know, play that kind of games. He hypnotized me to get over my addiction to chocolate, which was a complete failure because I'm as addicted as I've ever been. But one of the things he really taught us about was the power of intention. And he would, after our meditations, often ask us to repeat this phrase. And it says, I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience and set the goals I will achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. My dad would ask my brother, after our meditations and repeating this, what do you ask for? So kids growing up in Boston, we'd ask for tickets to the Celtics, a trip to Hawaii, a new Atari game, which shows how old we are, and new clothes. And my dad would listen really patiently, and then he would say, okay, we'll work on all that. But what about asking for love, connection, inspiration, a sense of purpose? And we were taught on a daily basis to ask for the qualities in our life that would make us feel healthy, happy, more connected, and of purpose. So that's what intents are. Intents represent our deepest desires of who we aspire to be, as individuals, of members of our families and communities, as citizens of Mother Earth. And intents are very different from goals. You know, goals come from the mind. They have end goals and task lists, and, you know, many of us are goal-oriented. But intents come from the soul. They really come from that deep place when we ask ourselves, who am I, what do I want, and how can I serve? So I feel very blessed that I grew up in an environment where I was taught all of these concepts. That being said, both my brother and I really had no interest in my dad's world. We were both kids in Boston. We went to college on the East Coast. And when it came time for me to kind of go out into the workforce, I really thought, okay, what's the coolest job I could get? And at the time, MTV was just launching internationally, and I had grown up knowing Michael Jackson and helping him with his Heal the World Foundation. So I had seen the power that music and media had to kind of affect the world. And so for me, obviously, MTV was the coolest thing I could do. So I set a very clear goal to go and work for them, got a job in New York, and within 3 months, a unique opportunity came up. MTV was just launching internationally, and so they were going to launch in India or in Asia. And I convinced them that I would be the perfect person to go launch MTV in India. So I was 23 years old. I said, oh, you know, my family is totally connected. I can speak Hindi. I know tons of people. Of course, I couldn't speak Hindi. I didn't know anyone in India. But I was good at telling a story. And so I got this unique opportunity to be the first person for MTV when they launched in India. And honestly, it was an incredible, incredible work experience. In fact, it gave me so many of the skills that I used later on in life. And I'm always grateful for that incredible experience. I actually met my husband at the first ever rave in New Delhi, so not a very Chopra-esque type of meeting, I will admit. And at 23, 24, I really kind of had this incredible dream life of, you know, I'm falling in love, I had this dream job, I got to do things like go to any nightclub in India or in Asia, and I was learning everything from marketing to ad sales to business development to producing videos for No Doubt in the streets of Bombay. And so life was really good. But then something happened that was, as I say, the first point of like that messy journey that we all have. And so in sharing these stories, I hope that it helps you reflect on your own stories. That's really the intent here. So we had sold our first ever sponsorship for the channel. It was a big deal. We were in Bombay. I used to coordinate basically when people used to visit India and then they'd leave. So I had done all the pre-work. We had this great meeting and we sold this first ever sponsorship. And we were driving in our kind of fancy air-conditioned car through the streets of Bombay to our fancy five-star hotel. And we got stuck in traffic. Now, this is in Bombay, which is a big city, a city that has a lot of traffic normally, and in which, in those days, you really had to actually drive through the slums to get anywhere. Now, they have these nice flyovers, and one doesn't see the poverty as much. But in those days, you really had to drive through some very poor areas. And so as we were driving, I think we had a bottle of champagne celebrating our first business success in the country, we found ourselves stuck in traffic. And this is nothing unusual for India or any major city, but this time we really were just not moving. And so over the next hour, hour and a half, we just inched along in the traffic. And finally, we came to the area that seemed to be causing this delay. And it was a group of children, maybe 50 kids, the poorest of the poor, the slum kids. Kids who you could see the malnutrition in their stomachs, no shoes, ripped up clothing. But these kids were kind of in the street, mesmerized by something in a roadside stall. And so as we kind of inched along, we kind of looked what was the cause for this delay. And in the roadside stall, there was a television. It was hanging by wires, and in and out was flashing American kids dancing to hip-hop music on the beaches of Santa Monica, where I actually live now. And everybody in my car began to cheer because there was the MTV logo. And we had just had such huge success with our big sponsorship, but we also saw that, wow, look, we've touched every corner of the planet. This is amazing. And while everyone in my car began to cheer, my heart stopped, and I thought, oh my God, what am I doing? What am I doing? You know, I'd grown up in this environment where I was asked, you know, how can I serve? What are my deepest values, etc.? And while I realized that I had the dream job, literally, I wasn't serving in the way that I was meant to serve. I didn't know what I was meant to do, to be honest, but I realized that this wasn't my path. And so over the next few weeks, I decided to transition from that job. My husband and I got married. We came back to the U.S. and went to business school. And I have to say, you know, I've been very lucky. I've had a great career. I've done consulting projects. But I call it the messy journey because I feel there are times in our life where we are totally inspired, we're feeling healthy, we're feeling connected, and then somehow we get off the path. And sometimes we don't even realize we're off the path until something happens and we say, oh my God, you know, I'm not happy. I don't like what I'm doing. I'm feeling unhealthy. For some people, it happens with trauma. They've been diagnosed with a disease. They've gone through a divorce. Someone that they love has died. They've lost their job. And so when I grew up, I saw that many people came to my father in that capacity. And, you know, I never related to it because I never really had anything kind of traumatic per se happen to me. And that usually became the window for this journey of self-development, self-discovery. So I left India, kind of went to business school. I had all kinds of jobs. And then my husband and I decided to have a baby. And I was 30 years old. I was 5 months pregnant. I was super excited. And it was like magical and everything I hoped for, you know, in my life at that point. And I woke up one morning to a phone call. And it was my father on the other end of the line. And my father was sobbing. He was crying hysterically. My husband couldn't even understand what he was saying. So he gave me the phone. And in between his sobs, my dad said, put the TV on. And the first plane on 9/11 had just crashed into the first building. And while we were on the phone, the second plane crashed into the building. And my dad was hysterical, not only because of what was going on and the fear and anxiety and uncertainty, but my father thought that my brother was on that first plane. And so for the next 3 hours or so, and none of us knew what was happening that morning, we were scrambling to kind of find my brother, find the taxi that took him to the airport, and you know, we're obviously hysterical. My mother was on a plane coming from London that had to turn around, and you know, then the subsequent planes crashed as well. And so after we found my brother, settled down, it was actually 2 days later that I was going for a walk on the beach. I ended up fainting just from stress and found myself in a hotel room, 5 months pregnant with my baby being monitored just to make sure she was okay. And I have to say that at the age of 30 was the first time in my life that suddenly I really deeply started to question, who am I? What do I want, and how can I serve? Like, how can I serve this baby, this innocent soul that I'm bringing into a world that has a lot of fear and hatred, and, you know, that could be scary. Of course, it has love and passion and good people, but for the first time in my life, I really did some soul searching. And I ended up going back to the lessons that my dad had taught me growing up, thinking about what are my intents? You know, how can I serve? How do I want to serve myself and my children on this journey together moving forward? And so that actually became my first book called 100 Promises to My Baby. I followed it with a book called 100 Questions from My Child. And for 10 years, you know, I was totally immersed in between writing and speaking, being home with my girls, finding this balance, doing consulting projects, and life started to get busy again, but good. And I couldn't complain, you know, I was kind of finding success. And a few years ago, I found myself speaking to a group of women, probably like 50 women, about meditation and balance and health and being mindfulness. My kids were about 10 and 8 years old, and I found that as I was speaking to the audience about all these great things, I was having a parallel conversation in my head that went like this. Oh my God, I can't believe I had that chocolate chip cookie and double macchiato before getting on stage. I have to go get the dry cleaning, pick up the dog food. I forgot to put the permission slip in for my kids. I have to write that letter to my investors. And I realized that while I was speaking about mindfulness, presence, all the good things in life, I was a complete hypocrite having a total meltdown on stage. So being overwhelmed by my internal dialogue, I actually decided I was going to ask the audience to close their eyes and meditate so that I could deal with my own drama. It's a great trick. So as everyone in the audience sat with their eyes closed with smiling faces, I stood on stage and really started to look at my life. And I realized that I was completely off balance. You know, I was tired and frustrated. I would feel like I'm running around all day, but what did I accomplish? I had body aches. I had put on weight. And I just didn't know. What, like, there was nothing in particular I could say, but I just felt overwhelmed. I felt unhappy. And so I made a decision that day on stage that I was really going to dig deep and understand, you know, what balance meant for me, what living with intent actually meant for me, despite talking about it all the time. So I made a commitment to write this book, and the first thing I decided to do was to reach out to experts. You know, one of the advantages of having my dad is that I could reach out to great teachers. So I reached out to people like Marianne Williamson and Eckhart Tolle, Andrew Weil, because I thought, oh, maybe he can help me with my sugar addiction. Then I thought, okay, who are the people that I really admire in terms of the work they're doing? And at the top of my list was Carol Stern, who's the head of UNICEF, because I thought, my God, here's a woman who every day is saving the lives of children. So I emailed her, and she was very gracious and said, yes, come meet me in New York. And I'll never forget, I flew to New York to go meet her, and I was waiting outside. I kind of was nervous about, like, this meeting with one of my kind of heroes. And when I went inside to meet her, she was totally flustered. She had a suitcase by the side of her desk because she was leaving for Rwanda. In a few hours, but her son had forgotten his homework, his math homework. So she was like texting with her husband and like all frazzled because her son was kind of stressed out. And I thought, oh my God, this is perfect. She's a mess just like me. And so I had this great journey of meeting different people and really going back to many of the lessons that I had learned growing up. I actually have to admit, you know, I learned how to meditate when I was 9, but I'm the most irregular meditator on the planet. I sometimes I've gone through years where I do it regularly, years when I don't do it, and at this stage in my life, I had completely lost the practice because, frankly, I just didn't have time. So, as part of the book, I came up with my path to intent, which I'm going to quickly walk through, but I want to really focus more on doing an exercise together. So another tip for people who want to write or speak, I came up with an acronym around INTENT. So, you know, people have the 7 spiritual laws of success, the 4 agreements, or do acronyms. So around this acronym of intent is incubate, notice, trust, express, nurture, and take action. So the first one is actually incubate. I think this is the most important one. Finding moments of silence and connection with yourself. When my father began speaking about meditation and the mind-body connection 30 years ago, he was considered the East Asian witch doctor who sold snake oil. Today, we have yoga studios all over the world and the country. Hospitals and doctors are prescribing meditation. People are learning it in schools. There are real benefits to the practice, real physical, emotional, mental benefits. And so sometimes we just need some quiet time. It's in that quiet time, in silence, where we actually heal our bodies, where we connect with ourselves, where we get deep rest. And so later in the session, I'm going to do a really quick practical meditation that you can do anywhere and anytime. But I chose the word incubate because it represented for me the idea that sometimes things take time. Sometimes knowing what we want, our deepest desires, we don't even know them. We don't even know what we want to do. But an intent is like a seed. You know, we plant a seed in the ground. We put the dirt on it. We let the sun and the water nurture it. It takes time for it to blossom into something. And we don't even know sometimes what it's going to blossom into. But we trust that in planting that seed, something beautiful will come out of it. So an intent really is kind of taking time to be silent and to really trust that we're planting the seeds and listening to our deepest desires. N is for notice. So another game that my dad used to make my brother and I play when we were kids was something we called the 3 C's. And he would make us go through a day, literally an entire day, where we were not allowed to criticize, condemn, or complain. We were not allowed to say it, like we'd get points taken away. So me and my brother, being very competitive, would keep bugging each other. You know, my brother would poke me to complain about him, etc. And I challenge each of you, not today, but maybe Monday or tomorrow evening, before you have to, when you're back with your family and your kids and out of this great environment, to spend 1 hour not criticizing, condemning, or complaining. And when you start to do it, or you internally start to do it, just decide to make a shift. And this, coming back to this lesson, was really powerful for me because I realized that my dialogue was, I'm tired, I'm overwhelmed, I'm frustrated, I'm exhausted. And if I was saying that all the time, that was actually the reality of my days. Notice was also noticing the messages that my body is sending me. So I'm one of those people, I'm always on the latest diet or cleanse or juicing or, you know, soul cycle or exercising, etc. But I made a decision that instead I was just going to listen to what my body was telling me because I was having body pain. I started to notice like how my body reacted to all the sugar that I was having, to the gluten that I was having, how I slept better when I didn't do certain things. And so in shifting really to just noticing my body, I naturally started to make adjustments that I had been struggling with for years and years and years. Noticing is also noticing the people, the places, and the circumstances that we come across every day. So often we are so goal-oriented, especially in this kind of society, and we have a very specific goal ahead. But we don't even take time to notice the person who's sitting right next to us, who may be part of a magical journey, who may be kind of that angel to help us come up with a new idea or a new connection. And so notice is also kind of being more aware of all the magical opportunities around us all the time and not just getting stuck in that dark tunnel going to the end. So we're going to do an exercise now. So after my kind of drama moment on stage, soon after, I went home to my parents for a weekend with my husband. And as was usual, my mom was cooking Indian food. My kids were watching television. My husband had gone for a run. My dad was sitting on the computer on Twitter. And so I decided, you know what? Maybe I should talk to my dad. So, you know, in my family, when any of us have a problem, we go to my mom. None of us go to my dad. The rest of the world may go to my dad, but we go to my mom. So this was kind of unusual for me to go talk to my father. So my dad was sitting at the computer, and I went and sat next to him, and I said, you know, Papa, I want to talk to you. And so he was mid-tweet, and he said, yeah. And so I said, you know, I'm feeling stressed and overwhelmed and unhealthy, unhappy. And my dad kind of paused, and I saw him look at me. And then I saw utter panic in his eyes, and he started to look for my mother to come and deal with this situation. And I said, no, it's okay, it's okay. There's nothing major going on, but, you know, I'm confused. I don't even know where to begin. And I literally watched my dad go from, like, utter panicked father mode, take a deep breath, I go to Deepak Chopra mode and feel like, oh, okay, I can handle this. And he began to share with me the work of Dr. Dan Siegel and how, you know, our neurology and our brain connections are nurtured by a healthy mind-body platter. And really looking at some of the scientific work behind how we kind of lead a well life. And with that, my dad and I came up with this practical exercise, which I want to walk you through right now. And it's called, it's a balance wheel. I have it in the book. But what I'd like to do is actually go through it together now. So I'd like you all to put your phones away, your pads and paper away. And we're going to go through this exercise together. So I would suggest, if you're open to it, when we do it, to keep your eyes closed. But if you're not comfortable with your eyes closed, it's fine. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just ask you maybe 10, 12 questions. And when I ask the questions, I want you to just experience the answers, okay? Don't feel like you have to intellectualize or justify or say a particular answer. I want you to just feel the answers. And you, some of you may find it helpful to kind of do it on a scale of 1 to 10. You know, 1 is I'm really struggling in this area. 1 to 3, 4 to 6 is surviving, or 7 to 10 is thriving. But don't even worry about the numbers. Scale of 1 to 10, am I struggling or am I thriving? Or just feel what that feels like, okay? So, and don't worry about looking at the wheel or all that. I will ask the questions because I really want you to just intuitively feel the answers. So sit comfortably. If you're comfortable closing your eyes, go ahead and close your eyes. And I'd like you to take a deep breath in and out. And we'll take another breath in and out. I'm going to start asking the questions. Again, just experience the answers and feel, am I struggling, surviving, or thriving in this area? Do I feel rested? Do I feel rested? Do I get enough sleep at night? Do I get enough sleep at night? Do I eat healthy, nutritious foods? Do I eat healthy, nutritious foods? Do I move enough? Do I move enough? And again, we're just going to see, am I struggling? Am I surviving? Am I thriving in this area? Do I feel connected to my family? Do I feel connected to my friends, to my workers, my community? Do I feel financially secure? Do I feel financially secure? Do I like what I do every day? Do I like what I do every day? Do I feel like I get enough intellectual stimulation outside of work? Do I feel I get enough intellectual stimulation? Struggling, surviving, thriving. Do I have fun? Do I have fun? Do I laugh? Do I play? Do I feel I have a sense of purpose? Do I feel I have a sense of purpose? And do I feel spiritually connected? Do I feel spiritually connected? So keeping your eyes closed, you can take another breath in and out. And whenever you are ready, gently open your eyes. So sometimes we just need a moment of quiet to ask ourselves questions and to touch base. You know, when I did this exercise, you know, that I realized I was so overwhelmed. But when I started to break it down into practical pieces, I could see where I could start setting intents to make change. And we don't need to change everything in our life. Sometimes it's just one small thing, a micro intent. Choose one thing, choose one area where, and, you know, just for example, when I did this, I realized, you know, I was obviously struggling with the chocolate and the diet and all that, but like really where I was struggling is intellectual stimulation. I wasn't having fun anymore. You know, I enjoyed my work and my relationships were good, but I just wasn't happy. And so, and we'll get to kind of what I did to kind of bring that more into my life. But think of one, maybe two things that came up where you were struggling here and just set the intent to work on that right now. We don't, like I said, have to do everything because then it gets overwhelming. But we can start with small steps that ultimately have big impact. So that was the exercise of noticing. The next T, or the first T, is trust. So trust is trusting our intuition. Trust is trusting, like right now, when you ask yourself those questions, intellectually, your mind may be saying one thing, but inside or physically, your body is telling you something else. So trusting our intuition, trusting that when we ask ourselves, what do I want, that we trust the answers. You know, this is something I struggle with a lot because when I ask myself, what do I want? You know, I'm ambitious. I want a good book, sales. I want speaking opportunities. I want to make good money. But when I really ask myself, what do I want? You know, I want connection. I want to be like enjoying this magical time with my children. And I can't always do it in the way I want to do it. But at least let me know that that's my truth. Because then I start making changes, small changes, to value that more in my life. Trusting is also trusting other people and trusting the universe is there to support you. You know, for us, many women in the room, we try to do it all by ourselves. We don't trust that if we ask someone else for help, that they're there to help us. People want to support each other. When I launched my website, intent.com, we saw that, you know, people were posting intents, but so many more people were supporting each other. People want to support each other. We just have to trust that we can ask. So E is for express. I believe so strongly in expressing your intent that obviously I wrote my first book was 100 Promises to My Baby, where it was my intents to serve as a mother. And then I launched my social media company. You don't have to post your intent on social media and share it with the world, but do it for yourself. Take ownership of what you want. And for some people, that's really scary. And so I think, again, that's why this is a process. But when you are ready, write down your intent. Take ownership of it. Articulate it. And once you do that, that's like the actual step of planting the seed and saying, you know what, this is important to me and I'm going to make this happen. So I do believe strongly in the ritual of actually expressing your intent. And again, sometimes it takes time. I've gone through many phases in my life where I have no idea. But that's why, again, I stress that process of incubating and taking time. This is another exercise which you won't do now. But, you know, after I did that balance wheel, I started to think about, okay, here's where I'm lagging. And so this is a mind map. And it's basically really simple. You ask yourself, what makes me happy? I realized I didn't know what made me happy anymore. Like at 40, what made me happy was very different from what happened when I was 20. But I just didn't have time to even think about it. And so just the exercise of sitting and writing what makes me happy. And, you know, I thought friends and travel and good food and reading literature. You know, I talked about how I was intellectually not stimulated. I spent hours on Facebook looking at everyone's profile, but I hadn't read a book in years. And so again, I had this dialogue about why I was so busy without actually recognizing what makes me happy. So we're gonna come back to this. Nurture. This is so important. This is my favorite chapter in my book when I wrote it because it's about self-care. It's about letting go of guilt and self-criticism and taking care of ourselves. So for this chapter in the book, what had happened was, in my family, my grandparents live in India, and they were growing older, and so we rotate taking care of them. So it became my turn to go to India. My mom comes and stays with my kids, and I went to India for 10 days or so. And, I had this thing, oh, look at what a great grandchild I am, going to take care of my elderly grandparents. and so I flew to India, and the night I got to India, I went home, and I went to sleep, and I had like a sheet on me. The next time I woke up, I had a blanket, and the fan was on. The next time the fan was off, the air conditioning was on. The next time there was a glass of water on the side of my bed. And in the morning, my grandfather came in with the newspaper and tea, and my grandmother made my breakfast, and I realized that my grandparents were just taking care of me. They had spent the whole night making sure that I was comfortable. And at 40, who does that anymore? Like, I was just, like, blown away by what it felt like to be cared for, to be nurtured, because we're so busy taking care of our kids and our coworkers and our community and our parents, and we're stretched in so many directions that we just don't take care of ourselves. And so I had this week of just being completely nurtured and taken care of by my grandparents. And again, like I said, not everyone's ever going to have that magical experience, but it was just such a reminder to me that we can't give to others if we have nothing to give ourselves. And so even if it's finding, that 5 minutes in the day, or, trying to set up time for ourselves or to connect with people we love or our family, that becomes so important. And the final T is take action. So, I grew up in the self-help world where everyone was like, oh, just say what you want and it will magically happen. I actually don't believe in that at all. I believe that there is a very practical time for smart goals. But when you do all these other steps, it becomes really clear what you want, and actually executing on the goals becomes much easier. So I showed you that mind map earlier, and here it is again. So these were the things that make me happy. Family, a nice home, travel, teaching, feeling financially secure. What I did with this mind map, though, is once I started to fill in the holes, then the next step is to connect random bubbles. So, for example, I connected intellectual stimulation with friends. Super simple idea, start a book club. I cannot tell you how much joy the book club has given to me in my life. My friends and I meet every 6 to 8 weeks. None of us have ever read the book that we were supposed to because we're all so busy. We get a bottle of wine. We pretend for 5 minutes we're going to talk about the book, but we end up just chatting and reconnecting. And it's such a simple thing, but it's really brought a lot of joy into my life. I connected travel and family and good food. And my husband and I decided to take a vacation to Vancouver to go eat at our favorite Indian restaurant. It turned out the weekend we decided to go, Adele was playing, so we added music. And we made a big thing of it and had this family vacation in Vancouver, but it incorporated other aspects of our life. So once you kind of identify things that make you happy, actually find creative, fun ways. And they don't have to be complicated. They don't have to require a lot of money. They can be really simple things. I've started going just for walks with my friends. And again, it's just such a simple thing of taking care of myself, but it's made a huge impact in my life. So what I'd like to do now is actually teach you a very simple meditation. Meditation has many, many benefits. And the meditation that we're going to practice today is something that you can do anywhere, anytime, in your office. I do it in carpool line, in a busy airport. And I know many people now have their own meditation practice, which is amazing because my dad, when he started talking about this stuff, nobody did it. But like I said, this is very mainstream. So what we're going to do is use a simple sound. And we're going to use the words I am. So I, the letter I, A-M, I am, okay? You can think of I am as a primordial sound, a healing sound. So the sound of I am is actually similar to Om, to Amen, to Abraham, to Amma, Mama. They're sounds that are healing sounds. It's vibrationally energy, like that is healing. So you can think of the wind blowing through the trees or the sound of the ocean. So I am Amen, Mama, the infinite to the finite. So the way our mind works is one mind, one thought triggers another thought, triggers another thought, triggers another thought. Our mind's always racing. In this meditation, what we're going to do is we're going to mentally repeat the words, I am, I am. And what happens is when we introduce that word, it just starts breaking the constant triggering of thoughts, right? So we're going to close our eyes. We'll say, I'll tell you first, I am, I am, I am. What will happen is you'll say it three or four times, and then your mind's going to begin to wander. You'll think, oh, I should have had that tea. I need to go to the bathroom. When is this ever going to end? And so your mind's going to say, oh, I have to do dinner and call my mother-in-law. And so your mind will begin to wander. That is completely normal, natural, and what your mind wants to do. So we're not trying to empty our mind at all. All we're doing is we're trying to settle our thoughts. And by using this word, sometimes it just helps break the constant cycle of thoughts. So what we're going to do is I'm going to guide you through the meditation. And then at the end of the meditation, I'm actually going to ask four questions again. So I like to add the self-reflection to the meditation. When you do this meditation on your own, you don't have to ask these questions. Just since we're in a nice group, we might as well. So I'm going to ask the questions. And again, like before, I want you to just intuitively experience the answers, okay? So everybody sit comfortably. Take a deep breath. And again, if you're comfortable, close your eyes. And again, let's just breathe in and out. And once again, in and out. Now I'd like you to mentally repeat the words, I am. I am. Don't worry about the rhythm or pace. Just repeat the words, I am. And when your attention wanders to other thoughts, to sensations in your body, to distractions in the environment, know that that is normal and natural, but just gently come back to the words, I am. And we're going to sit in silence like this for about a minute or so. Now keep your eyes closed. You can stop repeating I am. And once again, let's just take a breath in and out. I'm now going to ask four questions. So keep the eyes closed if you're comfortable and just experience the answers. Don't feel the need to intellectually answer them. Who am I? Who am I? What do I want? What do I want? How can I serve? But let's begin with how can I serve myself? How can I serve myself? And now, how can I serve? How can I serve my world? How can I serve my world? And now I'd like you to shift your attention to your heart. And I'd like you to think about, what am I grateful for today? What am I grateful for today? Now let's let go of any of the thoughts, images, sensations that may have come up. And I'd like you, with your eyes closed, to again take a deep breath in and out. And whenever you're ready, gently open your eyes. So that's a very simple meditation. Find 5 minutes, 10 minutes to just close your eyes, mentally repeat the words I am. Let your mind wander, but when you're comfortable, when you notice, just come back to the words. And it will be this constant flow between thoughts, sensations, images, and the words. And you know, for some people, when I ask the questions, it brings up anxiety, it brings up uncertainty. People, you don't know, but that's okay. It's okay not to know, you know, but what we do is we start listening. We start trusting our intuition. So I'd like to end with another story. I did this as a TEDx talk at one point. You know, when I came up with my list of people I wanted to talk to, at the top of my list was a writer named Eckhart Tolle. And some of you may be familiar with Eckhart Tolle. He wrote a book called The Power of Now and other books. Oprah's a big fan of his. He comes to the Chopra Center. And so I thought, you know, if anyone knows about purpose and living with intent, it should be him. So I reached out to him. And I wrote to them and his office, and they wrote back and they said, you know, he doesn't really take interviews, but he's a big fan of your dad's and a friend. So yes, he'll meet with you. One of the advantages of coming from my family. But I had written to him in June and they said, okay, we'll set up a time to meet in February. So I had a long time to read his books, to watch all his YouTube videos, to really prepare for this interview. And I kind of narrowed it down to, you know, my top 10 questions. And I was super excited. This was going to be like an anchor interview for my book. The February morning came, and I woke up super early at 4:30 in the morning to catch a flight from LA to San Francisco, where I was going to meet him. And I woke up that morning with the worst allergies I've ever had in my life. I was sneezing, my throat was dry, my eyes were watering, and I was just such a mess. I actually considered canceling the interview. But I thought, oh my God, it took me 9 months to set up this interview. I got to just deal. So I stuffed myself with cold medicine and drank a lot of coffee. But when I woke up, I actually picked up my phone and there was a text message from my father. And the message said, good luck with the interview. Remember, he is always in the now. So I read that. And I was like, what the hell is my dad talking about? But whatever. I got ready, took all my medicine, headed to the airport, got on the flight, and when I landed, there was another text message from my father, smiley face in the now. I went to the hotel and in the lobby met Eckhart's assistant, who was so gracious and said, you know, thank you so much for coming. He's really excited to meet with you. And I was feeling like my medicine had kicked in. I was totally pumped for the interview. And then he said to me, I just need you to know that he has a really busy schedule. So I'm going to walk you up. You'll have 15 minutes, and then I'll knock on the door, and you get up and leave. So I smiled and said, oh, thank you. But suddenly I was like, 15 minutes? I've been preparing for 9 months for this interview. I have 10 questions. And my heart started to beat fast. My hands were sweating. I went into total anxiety mode. But I said, oh, okay, thank you so much. So we got in the elevator, went up, and there was another ping on my phone, and it said, in the now, with a smiley face. And I was like, shut up, and I put the phone off. And we went to the room. And so again, I was so worked up. We knocked on the door and Eckhart opened the door. And I have to say, he had the most peaceful, gentle presence. He reminded me of my grandfather. And suddenly I just felt calm and like it was great. So we went inside, sat down. I put my phone next to me and I was very cognizant of the 15 minutes. So I quickly made the introduction about my book and what I was going to write about. And I said, you know, I've been thinking about intent and purpose. And Eckhart was really sweet and he listened. And then he said, intent is the most powerful force in the universe. So I sat forward, my pen and paper in hand, ready for the universe's secrets to be revealed to me. And then he stopped. And I was like, and he said, you know, do you hear those bells? So I was like, what? And he said, those bells. And so I heard some church bells ringing. So I was like, yeah, I hear the bells. And he said, you know, when I was young, I used to work in a church. And these bells remind me of that time in Germany. So I smiled like, great, nice story, but I have like 9 minutes left. But I smiled and listened to him. And then he said, you know what? Let's listen to the bells. So I was like, oh, okay. And so these bells started to ring. And once again, my heart started beating fast. And I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, this is a total disaster. What am I going to say to my publisher, et cetera, et cetera. And Eckhart sat there with a smile on his face, just enjoying the bells. And the bells, they just kept ringing. And ringing. And ringing. The damn bells just would not stop ringing. And we were 9 minutes, getting on 10 minutes, and I was getting more and more anxious. And finally, I decided, you know what? I gotta let go of this goal. Like, I came here with a very specific goal, but I gotta actually focus on the intent. And so I took a deep breath, and I let go, and I just sat and I listened to the bells with Eckhart Tolle. And suddenly I felt peaceful and happy and connected to this great teacher and whole and healthy. And there was a knock on the door, and it was his assistant, and the time was up. And so I put my hands together and I got up to leave. And then Eckhart said, no, just sit down. And he spent an hour and a half then with me talking about intention and purpose and how we can find and live with that purpose. And it was magical. And at one point I said to him, I said, you know, I grew up in this family where we were taught to ask every day, how can I serve? That we all have a unique purpose in life. And I said, that stresses me out because I don't know. I said, you know, I'm a soccer mom. Like, I write and I have a business, but half the time I'm just trying to get my kids to their activities. And that's what I do. And I want to leave you with what he said to me. He said, it is the everyday people who do extraordinary things who are raising the frequency of the planet. So never, ever underestimate what you are doing and how you are serving in that role as a soccer mom. But do it with purpose, do it with presence, and do it with joy. And then you will be living with intent. So thank you so much and have a great afternoon.
Thank you. She is now going to be signing her book in the hall if you want to meet her. So thank you all for coming. We appreciate it.